The late C.W. Bill Young served the 13th Congressional District for more than four decades. Now we're just weeks away from a special election to decide his replacement. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Craig Kopp, sitting in for Carson Cooper. David Jolly is a longtime aide to the late C.W. Bill Young and a former Washington lobbyist who has kind of a new job now, candidate for the congressional seat in Florida's 13th District in Pinellas County. Yes, that, of course, is Bill Young's seat. Jolly won a Republican primary contest to run for the seat and will face Democrat Alex Sink in a special election March 11th. And David Jolly joins us now. David Jolly, welcome to Florida Matters.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's good to have you here. How long did you work for Bill Young? Tell us the story of how you got from law school graduate to running for Congress.
Sure. So, listen, I worked with Mr. Young for nearly 20 years in one capacity or another, both on his congressional staff in D.C., here in Pinellas County, as well as his private counsel and political counsel, if you will. I actually went to law school at night while I was working for Mr. Young. When I graduated from college, I knew I should go to law school, but I wasn't ready for it. I knew I wasn't mature enough for it. I went to work on Capitol Hill. After 2 or 3 years, I enrolled in a night program at George Mason University Law School. And so I spent 4 years working on the Hill and then going to law school in the evenings.
I know it's not possible, but don't you think it kind of felt like Bill Young was going to be in Congress forever?
so that's funny. When I got to D.C., so when I graduated from college, I had never been north of Tennessee. My opponents like to paint me as this Washington insider and so forth, and we can talk about that. But the truth is, I was a preacher's kid who was born in Dunedin, spent a lot of time over here in Dade City. Actually, my father was a pastor at First Baptist Dade City. We didn't come from means. And when I graduated from college, I'd never been north of Tennessee. When Republicans won the Congress in 1994, I had some pretty core economic and fiscal conservative positions. I wanted to get involved in public policy. So I went to D.C. I didn't know a soul. And somebody said, well, I know a man named Bill Young. You should meet him. At the time, I thought, well, I don't want to work for this old guy. He's already been in office, you know, for 24 years. Little did I know it was going to be the opportunity to work for one of the greatest legislators in Congress. The irony is, in 1995, one of the first issues he had me work on was the term limits debate. Well, I was born in 1972. He was elected to Congress in 1970. And here I was at 20-something years old talking about term limits.
Quite an education, I assume.
Very much. Capitol Hill is the best graduate school in the country.
Since it felt like he was going to be there and be there and be there and right. Never be gone, did you ever consider running for this office before he died?
The first time it came up was in 2009. He considered retiring, and it was at a point in my life where I thought perhaps that was something I would be interested in. He and I discussed it, and I began to think about it then. Fortunately, he stayed in office for several more years. I've never been one who has just set out to say, I want to run for public office. Frankly, there's very little reason why I should be leaving my business and getting into politics. But I felt like the time was right this go-round. I felt like I had an opportunity to offer something to the voters. You know, when Mr. Young passed away, there were several candidates being discussed. I went to a few of them, one in particular, Mayor Rick Baker from St. Petersburg, and I said, you know, Mayor, I think you should run. I think you would be a great person in this seat. I'd like to support you. And if you decide to run, let me help go to the other candidates who are considering it and say we need to clear the primary. When he chose not to run, I decided the time was right for me to get in.
By 2009, when you said this was first discussed, you were already out of Congressman Young's office.
I was.
Was a lobbyist. Now, we need to talk about lobbyists.
Yes, let's do it, please.
What's a lobbyist do, and how does that kind of work qualify you to be a member of Congress?
Listen, my opponents have a lot of fun with the term lobbying, and I understand kind of the toxicity.
They're not exactly lauded in
a
lot of circles.
That's right.
I think you know
that. They're not. Listen, it's advocacy. And let me give you a couple examples, and then we can really get into some of the concerns people have about lobbying. But let me give you a couple examples of what it really means. Mark Lunsford, who lost his daughter Jessica to a sexual predator in 2005, I met him one day when he was lobbying for funding for the Marshal Service to go after sex offenders, and he wasn't able to get it done. for everything he had accomplished to get the law in place, he wasn't able to get funding for the Marshal Service. I said, I want to help you, Mark. And so pro bono, he and I for 2 years worked to secure nearly $60 million for the Marshal Service to go after sex offenders, to help our communities be safer, our children to be safer. Now, technically, that makes me a lobbyist. That makes Mark Lunsford a lobbyist. I've also worked with a local business in Pinellas County that developed a technology to detect roadside bombs at a distance, so our men and women in uniform don't have to be in contact with them before they detect them. We accomplished two things I did as their lobbyist. First, we grew that small company from 3 people to 30 people, 30 employees now in Pinellas County. And secondly, we got those units deployed to Iraq this year. So they're in the field protecting the lives of soldiers.
Now, it's a business, so people pay you to be their advocate in Congress. And I assume they pay you because of your background and knowing your ways around the halls and what's behind door number one and what's behind door number two. In this campaign, you've already been accused of lobbying for more offshore oil drilling for the dictator of Pakistan. Those people do have lobbyists. They do have advocates in the halls of Congress. Were you one of them?
So let's go back to being paid as an advocate, if you will. The University of South Florida has a Department of Government Affairs. The city of Tampa has a Department of Government Affairs. The city of St. Petersburg, Clearwater. As an organization, they determine whether to vest responsibility for advocacy internally with one of their employees, or they decide to contract out with somebody perhaps in Washington, D.C., or who has more experience than their internal staff. That's simply deciding the best use of resources. So USF, for instance, has used internal government affairs relations professionals, but they've also used external because they want to make sure if they're involved in dealing with the government, they have the best shot at dealing with the government in a favorable way. Now, my opponents have a lot of fun going to the records and saying he lobbied for this, he lobbied for that. The two you mentioned are absolute falsehoods. So I have never lobbied for increased offshore oil drilling.
Did a company you work for lobby for offshore?
No. So here's the two issues. I represented a free market think tank on offshore oil drilling. I actually didn't represent them on energy whatsoever. I represented them on transparency of public employee pension actuariales.
Now, fascinating.
Fascinating, right? But the idea was there were several towns in the country that had gone bankrupt. The pension beneficiaries then were left with nothing. Municipalities do not have to comply with the same gap procedures that the private sector does. So our initiative was to say municipalities and states with pension plans have to disclose their actuarial analysis. They don't have to change it. They don't have to change their formulas, but they have to disclose it. It was a transparency rule. Now, in the course of meeting with several congressional leaders, including Paul Ryan, one of the issues that came up was energy independence. The moment, and listen, I'm an attorney. I take compliance very seriously. The moment a topic is discussed on Capitol Hill, if I'm a registered lobbyist, I have to disclose it was discussed. That's very different than saying either I'm for it, against it, or I even lobbied for it. And that's not the case. The important thing that my opponent always wants to avoid is where we actually stand on the issues. So my position on oil drilling. I worked on the current ban in the Eastern Gulf. The 230-mile ban is something that I worked on when I was a member of the congressional staff. I support the ban in the Eastern Gulf. I do support continued exploration in the central and western regions of the Gulf, which is actually the current compromise through 2022. Pakistan, I had nothing to do with Pakistan.
You ever been to Pakistan?
I've never met the dictator. I didn't realize until I woke up and saw the same commercial you did that I was so closely related to Musharraf, but apparently my opponent wants you to think I am.
Your opponent in this race, Alex Sink, you say, was handpicked by the Washington establishment.
Right.
As a lobbyist, aren't you kind of part of the Washington establishment?
No, that's a great question. And that's a great question. And I want to drive a point of distinction down through this. My Washington experience is exactly that. It's experience working in Washington on behalf of Pinellas County. I'm a Pinellas County guy for nearly 20 years that has worked on behalf of the people of Pinellas County, including in Congress with Mr. Young, fighting for Pinellas County. My point on what happened with Alex becoming a candidate is this. The founders designed the Congress to be closest to the people. The House of Representatives is the only institution in the entire federal government that you have to be elected by your community. You can be president of the United States without ever having been elected to anything. You can be a senator. You can be vice president. You can be a cabinet secretary. You can be a Supreme Court justice. You cannot be a member of the House without being elected by your community. What Alex Sink and the Democratic National Committee has done is suggested to Pinellas County, Florida, that there's not a single person in Pinellas County capable of representing ourselves. Now, that's an issue that is at tension with the vision of the founders when it comes to Congress, and that's why I think it's a substantive issue.
But really, she's from Hillsborough County. It's not that far from Pinellas County. Isn't a member of Congress realistically these days dealing with a lot of issues that are key to the Tampa Bay region at this point?
It's another great question. Tim Nickens with the Tampa Bay Times took a broad swipe at me on exactly this issue. They're not mutually exclusive. I believe that a member of Congress should be from the community that they represent. Alex is not. I also believe it's a responsibility of a member of Congress to look out for regional priorities. So when I sat with the Tampa Tribune editorial board, they asked about my support for University of South Florida research and for MacDill Air Force Base. Yes, it's important that a member of the Pinellas County Congressional Delegation support regional economic development, and I would. I've done that in the past. I was there for the fights to protect MacDill. When the ROTC unit opened here on campus, I was there for the ribbon cutting. When USF St. Pete brought in SRI, Stanford Research Institute, and expanded their marine science facility there, I was there. All three of those institutions are outside of Congressional District 13, but they have an impact on the region and on our congressional district. It's important to advocate for the region, but I do believe that our representative should be from our own community, and Alex is not.
And your problem with that isn't that she couldn't handle Pinellas County issues. It's that the Democrats couldn't find somebody from the 13th to represent
them
in Congress.
There is a quiet audacity to what the Democrats have done. And it really goes back to what I said. They have suggested that there's not a single person in Pinellas County capable of representing ourselves. And I think that's wrong. Jessica Ehrlich was in this race. She is a competent, qualified attorney. She was a Democrat that the Democrats had already put on their watch list as somebody that was the future of the party. And the moment Mr. Young passed away, within 14 hours, the Democratic National Committee and Alex Sink positioned her to run for Mr. Young's seat and pushed out Jessica Ehrlich.
They don't call this a race for nothing, though. They want your party wants to win, her
right.
party wants to win. They decided that she had the best chance of winning and that she's
right.
got plenty of experience. Is there an issue in Pinellas County that you
Listen,
don't think she could handle?
They want to win this race for Washington, D.C. This is Washington, D.C. trying to win this race. When I got into this race, my phone never rang from Washington, D.C. I'm not a candidate of the NRCC. Frankly, in a lot of ways, they did not want me to run. They didn't think I was the right candidate for this race. I'm running this race on my own on behalf of Pinellas County. She's running this race for Washington, D.C.
What are the big issues facing Pinellas County that aren't being addressed in Congress right now? And why can you address them better than Bill Young addressed them?
Sure. So on the local level, two primary issues. Flood insurance absolutely is number one. The second is jobs. We know the manufacturing defense industry that built up around Mr. Young over the course of 43 years. Those jobs, in many ways, are now in jeopardy. We need somebody that can begin to work in the out-year budget of 2 to 3 years, that knows how to do it. I have done that. I have worked within the appropriations process to know how to protect jobs in Pinellas County. Alex is not familiar with our job base in Pinellas County. She simply is not. And she certainly is not knowledgeable about the congressional budgeting process to protect those jobs over the course of the next 2 to 3 years. I am. On flood insurance, I think we both agree that a delay in Biggert Waters is the immediate solution. We have to have that to stave off the increase. From there, we part ways. I actually think that once we have a delay in place, if we are going to have a federal program at all, we need to inject the efficiency and economics of the private sector into it, and once and for all recognize that we need to aggregate the risks across the country, across regions, and across natural disasters. We have earthquakes in California. We have tornadoes in the Midwest. We have snow in the Northwest and the Northeast. We have hurricanes in the Southeast. If we are going to have to look to Washington for any type of insurance product, let's aggregate the risk, diversify the risk, and ultimately add efficiencies to the product and drive the cost down. Now, Alex, comment on that. Is that's too hard to get done. She said last week that's too hard to get done. My attitude is I'm not resigned to a broken Congress. And if she thinks that's too hard to get done, I think it reflects the spirit in which she would bring service to the Congress.
We need to talk about that, but we also need to take a break. We're talking with David Jolly, Republican candidate for the 13th Congressional District seat. He's going to face off against Democrat Alex Sink in a special election March 11th. More in a moment. This is Florida Matters. I'm Craig Kopp sitting in for Carson Cooper, and in the studio with me is David Jolly, Republican candidate for the House seat in Florida's 13th District, the seat held for so many years by the late C.W. Bill Young. He's going up against Alex Sink in a special election March 11th. Mr. Jolly, we were talking about effectiveness before we took a break, and this current Congress has gained some notoriety for doing less than the do-nothing Congress in 1948. Something like 55 laws passed, a lot of them naming bridges and the such. Do you think this Congress is dysfunctional?
Oh, absolutely. Congress is broken, and frankly, in many ways, the administration is as well. Washington is broken. We know that. We have an opportunity to elect somebody with a spirit of constructive dialogue, willing to engage with the other side of the aisle. Listen, I'm a Republican who has come out and said I would have opposed the government shutdown. I think that's wrong. We have to have a government that works. I think the first thing we need to do in Washington is restore regular order.
What does that mean?
Right. So if you go back, and again, this goes to my experience that I believe provides a unique qualification. In the past 6 to 8 years, we have abandoned regular order, the committee structure, the idea of actually putting a bill into a committee, having the subcommittees work on it, Republicans and Democrats, having the full committee work on it, Republicans and Democrats, and then bringing it to the floor. The House has done better at this in the past few years to restore order. The Senate has abandoned all procedural order. It's important because if you have regular order, when legislation actually gets to the floor, you have already engaged in constructive dialogue and begun to build a coalition. What we have right now is governing by leadership. It's Boehner, Reid, and Obama, and it's whatever the three of them can work out. That's why it's broken. The members don't have an opportunity to influence the process right now.
Now, you've been in the halls of Congress. I think some of the words you just used about, you know, dialogue are a foreign language at this point in the halls of Congress. How can one person change that?
Well, I don't know that one person actually can, other than to continue to carry the banner every day about working together. If you look at the 90s, for instance, for all of the fights that Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton had, and all of
some fights.
There were some fights. There were classic stories. You know what? In 1996, we got major welfare reform legislation enacted, because even though they had that little argument about who ignored whom on Air Force One, the fact is they had a dialogue. They got work done. Bill Clinton, for all of the disagreements that Republicans had, was very engaging with Capitol Hill, actually showed leadership with Capitol Hill, and tried to build constructive coalitions. I don't think this administration has done that. This administration, if you look at his State of the Union speech the other night, he said, I'm going to enforce the laws I want to, I'm going to ignore the laws I don't want to, and wherever it's convenient, I'm going to ignore the Constitution and act by executive
order. Can you understand his frustration? However, with
well,
the
sure,
fact
but
that
frustration doesn't justify ignoring the Constitution.
Let's talk about Obamacare for a minute,
sure.
Because that's one of the things you do talk about. You want the Affordable Care Act repealed.
Correct.
How many repeal votes has Congress taken on Obamacare at this point?
You tell me, and this goes back to the government shutdown comment. So, yes, I would have voted for repeal every step of the way until September 30th. On that last vote, I believe we should have kept the government open. Adam Smith with the St. Petersburg Times said, you're telling me you would have been the only Republican to vote to keep the government open. And yes, I would have. That's the position I take. Now, we can't just talk about repeal. We actually do have to talk about replacements. And I can't let Republicans get away with simply saying we need private sector solutions. That's not good enough. What are we talking about? If we have a moment to discuss it, I'd like to talk about some ideas for replacement.
Give me one glimmer, because we haven't heard that many.
Right. So I've got two. Let's start with the first one. If you look at term life insurance, a young person, relatively healthy, is able to secure a policy for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and they can do it at an affordable price with some type of price certainty. I think through less government regulation, through a lesser statutory framework, we could create a term health insurance product that allows a young, healthy individual to secure a policy for a period of decades. It cannot be canceled regardless of the intervening health events. It's portable across state lines. It's tied to the individual. It's decoupled from the employer. If we reduce the tax regulations on the employer, we can allow the employer to reimburse that private individual for that policy. That's actually a plan that could be created through less government, not through more government.
You mentioned flood insurance earlier, and I wanted to talk about that for a minute and the effectiveness issue. Biggert Waters was done to reform the federal flood insurance because it had really been tapped out by Hurricane Katrina, Superstorm Sandy. And then all of a sudden, everyone's surprised when it goes into effect, and everybody's flood insurance just skyrockets, and some people are threatened with losing their homes. How in the world could Congress pass an act and not know that was going to happen?
And the author is actually the one leading the push for repeal or delay right now.
Exactly.
It goes back to Obamacare when Nancy Pelosi said, let's pass it now, we'll see what's in it later. It's the short-sightedness of Congress. Listen, what happened was the system was—
Some of those were members of your party.
Of course, of course. Listen, dereliction of duty is not unique to one party or the other. We have a bell curve in Congress just like we have in any other institution. We have good members of Congress. We have bad members of Congress. Regardless of party, throw out the bad ones. They don't belong there. The flood insurance program was so broken that however they tried to fix it with typical Washington fixes was not going to work. Starting off with the idea of just isolating floods is the wrong way to start it. We have to diversify the risk. Secondly, under enforcement. If you look at Superstorm Sandy, and I don't know the exact number, but I understand it's somewhere maybe up about 30%, were actually uninsured or underinsured. There was no compliance. Well, what happens when you have an insurance program with undercompliance? In the case of the federal government, they step in with FEMA emergency assistance anyway. So where's the incentive to actually participate in the program? The interesting thing, and I spoke last night with Homeowners Choice, they have begun to write policies at the pre-Biggert Waters rate, but they're doing it privately here in the state because they actually have determined on an actuarial analysis that the pre-Biggert Waters rate is actually competitive for the insurance industry. I think we're going to see that ultimately. When I talk about the national fund, I talk about that only to the extent that we currently have to look to Washington. The third point, you know, first is stall Biggert Waters. Second is a national fund. The third point is actually the private sector, through expedited state approval of insurance products, I believe are going to provide the most affordable product for homeowners. It's just going to take some time to get there.
Is the solution to many of America's problems in your mind? I know that you want less government. But let's take, for example, the push for raising the minimum wage.
Right.
Some people say it's the government telling business what to do. Others say it's the government setting parameters. If you wouldn't have those, there'd be an 8-year-old, you know, flipping burgers at
right.
McDonald's.
Sure. You know what I like to do first is look at the classic debates and then shatter the paradigms of how we got there. Shatter the premise behind the initial debate. So on minimum wage, why do we subject the minimum wage, the actual dollar amount, $7.25, $8.25, $10.10, why do we subject that to the arbitrary knowledge of the president and the Congress? Barack Obama's not an economist, neither is John Boehner. So why do we allow legislators to arbitrarily set it? I don't think we should. Look at other federal programs. Other federal programs, we have a cost of living adjustment. We have some type of index. Let's determine through a real thorough analysis, what is the appropriate minimum wage rate right now? And then let's establish some type of index to that and take it out of the hands of the political swings of the Republicans and Democrats. Let's determine what the right wage rate is for a minimum wage, and then let's just index it and leave it at that.
You're running for Congress. Congress has something like an average over the year of a 14% approval rate, which is, I'm not sure exactly why you want to become a part of that.
Some days I wonder as well.
Has Congress ever done something that has affected your life that ended up shaping your politics?
Listen, my primary core convictions really are economic. I do believe, let's talk about taxes. You know, everybody can argue, what's the right rate of taxes? I actually look at taxes as a freedom issue. And it's not just the federal government. We need to have a conversation about what is the appropriate level of taxation from all levels of government in the individual's life, from federal to state to county to the water district to the school district to property taxes, whatever it might be. What is the appropriate level of money that government should be allowed to take from the individual? Because ultimately what that means is the individual is resigning that portion of their life to government. I look at it in more of the philosophical sense of what is the role of government. So, yes, when you talk about significant reductions in taxes, to me those are freedom issues, and that affects every individual every day.
Let's get a little bit behind the politics for just a moment here
sure.
before we run out of time and find out who David Jolly is
yeah.
a little bit. When you're not doing this, when there's actually downtime, what's the first thing you go to? What do you do?
I live over in one of the beach communities, and mind you, as the Times has pointed out, a small condo not worthy of declaring my personal residence. But nonetheless, I live over in the beach communities. I'm a Pinellas County guy. If I have an opportunity to walk on the beach, I love it. Tampa Bay Magazine every year rates the sunsets as the number one attraction of the region. I agree with that. Believe it or not, I enjoy my privacy. I'm a particularly private person, which seems crazy that I'd be running for Congress. But I'm a quiet guy who enjoys watching the sunset.
We've got just a few minutes left here. We've wheeled a little soapbox in for you, give you just a little bit of see if you can do a stem winder in three
right.
minutes
well,
for us.
I don't Tell think us your listeners want to hear that.
The number one reason why Pinellas County voters ought to send you to Congress.
We lost somebody with 43 years of experience being effective for Pinellas County. This is a job interview process. I'm putting my qualifications in front of the voters, suggesting that the opportunity I had for nearly 20 years to work with Bill Young in the specific place of the United States Congress impacting Pinellas County makes me uniquely qualified for this. From there, we talk about the difference between the vision of government and the individual that Alex and I have. She embraced Obamacare from the very beginning. I think it's an intrusion into the individual's life. I think the individual mandate is unconstitutional. She believes the government should make more decisions for us. I believe it should make less. She's okay with spending more. I believe it should spend less. Those are different views of government. And ultimately, and I like the fact that we can put politics aside, I wish that Alex and I could appear together every day between now and March 11th and talk about the issues. I got into the race because I believe we're right on the issues. Perhaps the voters decide Alex is right on the issues, but they deserve to hear from us directly, to ask us hard questions, and not simply to be subjected to paid media hit ads that we wake up and see every morning.
And people in your name are using those.
Not in my name. No, this is
name.
Very important.
Okay.
I am running a positive campaign. If you ever see a commercial that says paid for by David Jolly, you're going to hear a positive message coming directly from me. I can't control the independent groups, and that's a shame. That's unfortunate, because I got into this race saying let's concentrate on the issues and run the race the right way. Unfortunately, I don't have any visibility to what outside groups do.
David Jolly's the Republican candidate for Congress in Florida's 13th District in Pinellas County. His opponent, Democrat Alex Sink, will be sitting where he is sitting at a future date. They face off in a special election March 11th. Mr. Jolly, thanks for being on Florida Matters.
You bet. Thank you very much for having me.
Next week on Florida Matters, our conversation with Alex Sink, the Democratic candidate for the 13th Congressional District. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page, or you can send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts and is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Craig Kopp, sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.